The oldest fear that humanity has had to confront is fear of the unknown. At every stage of life, from birth to death, we are forced to confront the unknown. Some try to confront it, while others merely file it away. As a nurse at a hospital, I've seen more than a few unexplainable occurrences in my line of work. I once even expected the physicians, who traipse about their high-minded talk about evidence-based medicine and rational responses, to try and confront the unexplainable. However, I've been disappointed time and again. In almost any hospital, past the coma ward, they keep the patients they don't want you to see. Patients that are bad luck. Patients that shouldn't have survived. Patients that are slowly becoming something else. I work at a smaller hospital now, out of the Oregon coast. It's better than most, but there's still plenty of weird stuff that goes on. I normally work night shifts. Some people hate it. The disconnection from society. I don't mind it so much though. It's not like the town has a vibrant nightlife. One night, I checked in when two other nurses were on duty. This was a bit of a surprise. Graveyard duty for the coma unit and medical exception ward was hardly a priority. I asked Evan and Shirley why we were all called on duty. There were multiple cardiac arrest incidents in the coma ward last night, and higher-ups wanted more staff on hand in case it happened again tonight, Devin said. That seems strange. Why would several random cardiac events make management concerned about more events occurring? It wasn't unusual for management to keep the whole picture to themselves, but this was a bit extreme, even for them. They were obviously concerned about something, but they were not inclined to share. At the end of the day, it probably wouldn't have made much difference. A large part of medical care is responding to emergencies that could have been prevented with timely care. I washed my hands and began my rounds. The green scrubs clung tightly. I was awkwardly sized, and the next largest pair of scrubs was much baggier than I liked. I signed off on the check-in sheet and began my rounds. I walked down the hallway to check on the first patient. Walter had been here for almost 5 years at this point. He'd been kicked out of 2 retirement homes for wandering hands. It was a weird sight to see. Walter suffered from a condition where his elbows and knees were gone, but many of his other joints remained. Walter's hands had a life of their own. They would crawl about on their fingertips, but Walter maintained that he had no control over them. He could still feel through them though. He just had no control. Those two hands would patrol about Walter's bed like tarantulas on leashes. I checked his IV, then went to the refrigerator in the hallway and retrieved his meal. He would often sleep through the normal meal times, only waking deep in the night. That wasn't the end of his odd preferences. He also insisted on meals being served cold. Tonight, it was cold mashed potatoes and cold chicken noodle soup. "Who's hungry?" I asked, hoping that my sing-song voice would inject some energy into the lethargic patient. "Oh, I'm hungry," answered the old man in the bed, as if he hadn't realized it. His hands continued to dart around, roving along the bed by their fingertips. I set the tray down and pulled up a seat. Taking a spoon from the dining service, I began scooping dollops of potato and depositing them in Walter's mouth. He was compliant today, but I had to feed him once when he was uncooperative. He gave me flashbacks to my childhood when Grandpa was in the hospital after his stroke. He refused to eat. When the nurse would try to feed him, he would thrash about. Eventually, they gave up and asked us, the family, to try feeding him. He thrashed about for us too at first. Mom and Dad had each taken turns and given up. At first, Grandpa resisted when I tried feeding him, but I was patient. Eventually, he grew tired, and I was able to get some broth into his mouth. That seemed to break his spirit, his resistance towards his life. He would live paralyzed for 9 more years. Walter wasn't like that, though. He greedily swallowed each new scoop of potato and soup. Although he was lucid, not all the lights were on at home. His mouth was topped by an unkempt mustache, and his frazzled white hair was cropped close to his head. Towards the end of the meal, he began to gently coo. It was still odd seeing a grown man do that, but the confirmation that he was happy was reassuring. Often, this job was thankless, and the rare instances of appreciation were nice. His meal finished, Walter drifted off to sleep, and stopped responding to the small talk I peppered him with. For someone whose family never visited, he was pretty disinterested in human contact. I took the dining service back to the kitchenette where I got it, and grabbed a meal for the next patient, Melvin. I went through my rounds, feeding and visiting with patients, killing time until my break came. I ditched the cheery demeanor and loaded a ciggy while walking to the balcony. The night air was chilly, but worth it for the nicotine buzz. 10 minutes went by quickly. I stubbed the cigarette and headed back inside. I was, perhaps, 20 feet from the service desk when my pager went off. I jogged the final dozen feet and earned a smoker's cough for it. Shirley was gone, but Devin was seated at the desk, talking quietly into the phone. She covered her mouth, and the receiver, as if that would hide a secret. "It's happening again. I told you we needed more people on duty." Devin registered my arrival, lowered the receiver, and directed me to go to the coma ward. There had been 2 more cardiac arrest incidents. I jogged back down the hall towards the coma ward. The nurse on duty directed me towards one of the rooms further down the hall. Pushing open the door, my nose was assaulted by a sickly sweet smell. Shirley was hunched over a motionless figure. I stepped closer. Shirley wasn't trying to revive the patient. Most of them had signed DNRs anyway. Rather, she was examining something. "What's up?" Shirley jumped a foot in the air. She turned around gingerly. I had obviously surprised her. She waved me over to the bedside. The person lying in the bed may have suffered cardiac failure, but it was hardly their only problem. The patient's mouth opened wide, and there seemed to be scratches across their face. Most of their teeth looked like they'd been pulled. I heard distant movement in the vents and turned to look up. The duty nurse chose that moment to enter the room. "The official cause of death is cardiac failure. If no one sees anything to the contrary, we list the cause of death as cardiac failure." "This was clearly not just a heart attack," said Shirley, gesturing at the corpse laid out before us. "Did you see any other explanation?" the nurse questioned indignantly, offended that Shirley had other ideas about how to handle the situation. "Well, no. We handle things a little differently in this department." The nurse pivoted and left the room with a humph. I shared a glance with Shirley to confirm our mutual disbelief in the nurse's attitude. I glanced up at the vent again and noticed that there was no cover for it in this room. I started walking to the door and Shirley followed. We crossed the hall to the room with the other cardiac incident. Opening the door to the room, I was blasted with cold air. No vent covers in this room either. The duty nurse struggled to pull the corpse of the second coma patient onto the stretcher for transport to the pathology department. I sidled over to help her and get a look at the second patient. The nurse bristled at first, but after a moment's struggle, accepted my help. Taking the shoulders, I looked down. This patient looked similar. Her toothless mouth was agape, as if something had forced its way in and played dentist, and her face was also covered in scratches. We heaved the body onto the stretcher with a thud, then secured it to ensure she didn't fall off during transport. The assistants seemed to mollify the nurse, who began pushing the stretcher out of the room towards the elevator. The door swung closed behind them. It looked like the same thing happened to that woman. Her mouth was wedged open, and there were scratches all over her face. She was missing a bunch of teeth, too. Definitely not heart attacks, said Shirley. Since there was clearly nothing we could do to help these patients, we decided to head back to the medical exceptions ward. We went back through the hall and past the reception desk, with nary a peep from the duty nurse. Apparently, the patients weren't the only ones who were catatonic. We passed the doorway for the medical exception ward, and it looked like Shirley had something heavy on her mind. I'm going to go tell Devin something strange is going on over at the coma ward. Maybe she can get the message across the administration. Okay, I'm going to hand back. There's a patient I want to check on, I said, slowing down and then doubling back towards Walter's room. Walter was fairly lucid most of the time. Maybe he had seen or heard something. Shirley rounded a corner and was out of sight. I came to the door and gingerly pushed it open. If Walter was asleep, I didn't want to wake him. Slipping through the door, I was surprised. The bed was empty. Covers and sheets pushed aside. The bathroom was empty too. The only light came from the fluorescent panels out in the hallway and the lamps lining the street outside. I stepped further into the room. A cool breeze gave me goosebumps, but there weren't any windows open. I looked up. The vent cover in Walter's room was missing too. I hadn't noticed that when I was feeding him earlier. I looked around on the bed on the off chance he had dragged himself out and was stuck on the floor. The room was quiet. I was at a loss as to what I should do in this situation. I had seen some strange things, but I had never dealt with a bedridden patient simply vanishing. I paused for a moment, contemplating whether to report his absence or to begin searching for him myself. As I weighed my choices, I heard the distant echoes of metal flexing coming from the exposed vent. Something was crawling through the air ducts. Was this the connection between the supposed cardiac incident? Was something crawling through the vents of the hospital and attacking people? Maybe whatever had attacked the coma patients had made Walter vanish. The sound was closer now. Something was definitely crawling through the hospital vent. I panicked and decided to retreat to the hallway to watch whatever happened from a safer distance. I closed the door to the room and crouched down, watching the vent duct and Walter's hospital bed through the window mounted in the door. A moment passed. The door blocked sound, making it difficult to gauge whether the source of noise was still making it through the vent. I'd nearly recovered my nerve and was about to re-enter the room until I saw it. In the gloom, two hands emerged from the duct. They waved about independently, as if they were two eye stalks for a snail. Periodically, they would grab something and pull their burden forward. They waved about as if there were no joints. Rather, they looked like they had managed to move by relaxing and contracting. I was overwhelmed with the conflicting waves of fascination and revulsion. I wanted to see what the arms were pulling forward, but common sense suggested that I did not want whatever they were pulling to see me. A clattering sound, followed by a thud, came from within the room. Certainly not enough noise to summon Shirley or Devin, but audible from the other side of the door. I could swear I heard the sound of slapping coming across the floor from Walter's bed towards the door. Slap, slap. I held my breath and edged away from the door. I was prepared to run. I stared at the door, waiting for the first sign it was opening before I ran. Instead, I heard the dull thud of the bathroom door closing. Confused, I stooped towards the door of Walter's room, stealing a glance through the window. The room appeared empty. However, the bathroom door was closed. I pressed my ear to the door. I heard vomiting. Projectile vomiting. Not just the dry heaving that you would expect from easily digested hospital food. It sounded faintly like chips, or maybe pebbles being dumped into a bowl. After 4 or 5 heaves, the vomiting abated. The faucet came on. It sounded like whatever was in the bathroom was washing up. The bathroom door opened. I could hear the squeak of the hinges. Whatever those arms were attached to pulled itself through the door and back towards Walter's bed, the sinuous slapping sound growing more faint. I pressed my ear closer to the door, intent on hearing what was transpiring inside. "What are you doing?" I flinched. Standing 10 feet away from me was Devin. This did not look good. Nurses skulking about, eavesdropping on patients. The hospital had already been litigated several times for incidents where nurses had stolen from patients. Would some nonsense line be enough to satisfy her? "I think I dropped my ID badge on the way back from the coma unit." "You mean the ID badge clipped to your scrubs?" "Oh, jeez. You're right. That was pretty stupid of me." Devin regarded me coolly for a moment. "Walter hasn't had a water check in the last 2 hours. Make sure you check on him before you come back to the duty station." My BS had passed muster. "I will," I stated. I turned to look through the room's window. Walter was back in bed, as if nothing had happened. Was I hallucinating? I was certain that I had seen and heard something unexplainable in that room. Devin turned and started walking back to the duty station. I rushed to push the door open. If something happened, I wanted it to happen when she was close enough to notice it. The lights were still off in Walter's room. A silence pervaded the space. The cover to the vent had been replaced, and the chill had abated. I stepped closer, past the hallway and the bathroom. Walter looked just like I had left him, rolled onto his side, facing away from the door. Had the bed really been empty? Was I just sleep-deprived and deluded? I quietly stepped forward. I didn't want to disturb the old man that was clearly resting in the bed. I was about to turn around and return to the duty station when I spotted one of Walter's wandering hands coming over his shoulder. It skittered down his back and gripped the rail of the bed. In one concerted motion, Walter's arm contracted, whipping his body around to face the door. That shouldn't have been possible. Walter's arms didn't have joints. I'd spent hours feeding him because he was unable to help himself. Walter's functioning arms were the least of my worries. A leering smile had grown since he turned to face me. Even in the dim light, I could tell there was food caught in his teeth. Food that certainly hadn't been there when I fed him earlier. I took a step back. Walter's eyes flicked open. They looked different. It was difficult to pick out at first in the gloom. They had the quality of eyes peering through a mask, as if Walter's skin was just a covering for something beneath. Black oil seemed to well up at the edges, clouding the whites of his eyes. Walter's smile turned into a stomach-turning rictus. I felt compelled to break his gaze as I backed out of the room. Although I didn't dare to meet Walter's gaze, I kept watch on him until I reached the door. I panicked as I bumped into it and fumbled for the handle. I opened the door and backed out into the light of the hallway. I took one last glance through the window. Walter was still in bed. His black eyes looked through me. I looked away, and when I looked back, they were closed. I was never sure how to report what I saw that night or even the wisdom of reporting it, period. Who would believe it? I still had trouble believing what I'd seen laying in Walter's bed. I tried broaching the topic with Devon once or twice, but she never acknowledged there was anything particularly odd about Walter. I found ways to avoid being alone with him after that. I didn't want to tempt fate, so I always made sure that either Shirley or Devon were around if I had to do something in his room. I think Devon did report what Shirley and I saw in the coma ward though. One day, I came in. She told me I had been transferred. I was now a trauma nurse. There was more blood and more work, but at least I never had to look at Walter's creepy grin again.